Thanks for joining me today at the Slat Edge Advantage. My name is Jeremy Torsk, and I am your host for this brand new podcast we put together to really focus the spotlight on people who make a difference in not just their own life and their family's life, but the lives of the people in their community, the people in their companies, and their extended family. So we have a ripple effect when we go out and help people, especially in business. And I'm from the streets. That's kind of my base. And what got me over the humps every time I thought I couldn't be as good as somebody, I couldn't catch a competitor, was these slight edge advantages that, for me, nobody outworks the kid. I was there first. I left last. And that's what this show is about. Other people in every walk of life that gets ahead, not only for themselves, their families, their communities, by employing their slight edge advantage. And today, we have a special guest, Joel Gandara, of the 31 Days to Become a Better Man book. And he's been a business coach. He's kind of turned that into a mindset coach for a group of men that I happen to belong to. And it's changing lives, really. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And just tell us a little bit about your slight edge advantage and kind of what separates you, what drives you, and maybe some of the adversity you faced over your different businesses, because you're like me, a serial entrepreneur.
That's right. We get bored quick, so we move on to the next thing and hopefully can scale that one and move on and go put our attention on another. Well, let's see. I started in Cuba. I came here on a boat when I was a kid, grew up poor. Grew up in not a great neighborhood. I would definitely don't want my kids growing up in the neighborhood I grew up in. And I knew one thing that I wanted to get out of it. I watched shows like Ricky Schroeder, Silver Spoons, and I thought that's the dream, to have a train in your house, to have all the toys you want, to have rich parents. That's what I wanted to do. And I didn't have any of that. But that was a big driver to get out of that bad neighborhood and rough situations. So that I had grit. And grit, yeah. I really don't believe that too many people in this world have outworked me. Some have, I'm sure. But around me, I didn't see anybody that worked harder than I did.
Yeah, now there's a difference between just working hard and working hard and smart, right? Because literally, this one job is West Boca Cable. Years and years ago, I transferred into this installer position, really just a basic function of cable TV construction. Then it was 6 months. We had a route, and you got paid by the point. So you had to work 4 hours or you could work 10 hours. Well, I was working 14, and everyone else was getting off at 2. And my supervisor came up to me one day and said, you know, I was down on my knees drilling the ground block, and so I was working very hard, but I wasn't making half the money or working double for the same money. And I said, Charles, I don't know what it is. You know, I've been doing this for, you know, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it was. I don't seem to be getting it. And he put his hand in his pocket and he had a toothpick, put the other toothpick in his mouth, and he says, well, partner, maybe this just ain't for you. And I thought, if that's the advice I'm going to get from this guy, I'm going to show him it is for me. And I think within 3 weeks, something clicked in me, and I just kind of stood back and evaluated my process. I evaluated, why is it taking me so long? I really looked at externally at the problem, not just inside, because I was working hard. What external factors were slowing me down? My van wasn't organized, all these things. And I got to the point where I was finishing almost maybe 1 o'clock, where everyone else was finishing 2 or 3. So I asked for a second route. So I was doing 2 routes a day and getting off. So I still worked my 14 hours, but I was making double the money that I was making before, because the small changes. And it was that F you, Charles. Charles Brand. Thank you, Charles Brand.
You
did me a huge favor. So that's kind of the difference between just working hard and having maybe some drive, because you can't work hard forever even with money. That can't be your drive, right?
Well, what you got to have is an open mind, open eyes, and look for opportunities. So in my situation, for example, if I got hired to dig ditches for people and I had to go to their backyards and my boss sent me to this house to dig, I would stir up a conversation. Even as a kid, I didn't dig ditches. But if I had to do that, I'd go to that homeowner and I'd say, oh, nice to meet you. My name's Joel. Here's what I'm doing. I'm here to do this thing. And in the conversation, probably something will come up to the effect of, you know what else I'm looking to do? this other thing. Well, that's my gig now.
Yeah.
And I'll get hired to do that thing.
Side hacks.
I did a lot of that. But I agree with you. It's not just about you got to work hard because you got to do what you got to do. But then you got to be looking for the next opportunity at all times.
Yeah, at all times. And that's kind of the thing is, what is it in you that makes you bored? Because I'm the same way. I know mine. I wasn't diagnosed till many, many years. I was almost 40 years old. I have ADHD. But what is it in you that made you kind of not complacent, not happy with the small gains you were making? Because when you came to America, as a young boy, I know that your father was an example of hardworking person, but not really getting a whole lot of material success to show for it. So was that something, now that you were here and you saw, well, some have and a lot don't, or what was the external?
Yeah. So there? I saw two shows. I saw a lot of TV shows when I was a little kid, but as Good Times, and they were poor.
Dynamite.
And I watched Ricky Schroeder, Silver Spoons, and I saw that difference. One would bring me down because I'd see the poorness, and the other one would bring me up with what's possible. And I like that possibility. Yeah. I didn't want to be there anymore. Now, I have ADHD, told to me by a psychologist around the age of 40 also.
Wow.
But also when I was a little kid, they told me I had hyperactivity disorder. Mm. I was told that same thing, I guess. Maybe they changed the name. I would get very bored. I did not do well in elementary school, middle school, or high school. I put myself through college. I paid every penny of it. It took me 10 years to get a bachelor's degree. There I did better.
Love that.
Because I was an adult and I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it. But when I was a kid, man, they would say, go do this thing. We're going to do this. I didn't have a clue what they were talking about.
Right.
First couple of years, the language. But after that, it's just, I didn't have the mind for that stuff. And I'd see all the kids get up in class and what are we doing? Where are we going? And they'd say, didn't you hear the teacher for the last 5 minutes? She said, all we're going to do. I didn't hear any of that. That's too long. Just tell me we're going to go to recess.
Right now.
So I needed quick little snippets. School didn't work for me. Early on, I started realizing I'm different. I get bored of things. I'm looking for the next thing. And that's where that led to more opportunities and finding those opportunities.
So when you start having some your own businesses, right? Did you ever have a job? Or did you have been in business like since a tyke and you just always doing your own thing?
Fourth grade, I started selling garbage pail kid cards, stamps, chocolate bars, everything I can get my hands on that I can make a little money. But then I always had a job. At 15, I started working at a chicken restaurant.
Yeah.
I got hepatitis working there. It was disgusting. The whole staff got it. We had to close down for a little while. It was so disgusting. We had no soap. We'd wash the dishes that people ate off of with no soap.
Wow.
It was disgusting. Raw, we handled raw food. So anyway, from 15, I always worked up until my 20s, but I always had that side hustle and that turned into a business of my own. But in my 20s, my last job was a great company, Carnival Cruise Lines, and I did sales for them here in South Florida. And that was a good job. It's where I first got my real training in sales.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the last time I worked for somebody, a couple decades ago.
Yeah, and so I had the bad boss, Charles, was a boss. That's what bosses are. And then luckily, I had a few really good leaders who taught me the difference. But I always had, because I started very young as an entrepreneur, but I had jobs as a contractor and then worked for Comcast for a long time. So in that Fortune 50 companies, learned a great deal of corporate structure and all that stuff. But in my mind, I was an entrepreneur. Everything that I ever touched, because when I was young, I had car washes and sold the toothpick stuffed in the cinnamon juice and cut lawn. Oh my God, so many lawns. And I knew the difference between getting all the money for doing the work or just getting a part and making somebody else rich. But I also knew that the personal side had no difference. And so whether I was an entrepreneur or an owner or manager or employee, that the people that I'm interacting with are impacted by my activities. So if I get a product, somebody sold the product and now I have to service the product. And then beyond that, if the person's not happy with my job, they'll return it, which impacts somebody else. So you have a domino effect. So whether it doesn't matter where I am in the machine, I treated it like my own business. I made sure at a certain point in my career to understand P&L. So I knew if my sector, my activities were being profitable for the company or not, because I used to be able to take that in and be able to use that to justify more money.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't have to be an entrepreneur to be an owner and a leader, right? I think there's a book, and I was going to buy it, but I saw it at Walmart, and it was $20. I'm not paying $20 for a book. But it was called Lead From Anywhere, I believe. I'm going to look that one up and buy it. So shout out to whoever wrote Lead From Anywhere, because that was it's a cool concept. Doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah, own what you do. You hear of people, I've read a lot of stories of guys who started sweeping floors and then they at a bank, and then they became a teller a few years later, then they became a banker, and then they became the vice president, and then now they're the president of the bank. Keep pushing and grinding and improving. You don't have to be an entrepreneur.
I literally started digging ditches and ended up a vice president of operations.
Well, there's a perfect example.
Over 30 years later, overnight success.
Yeah, exactly.
And I used to sweep the floors and all that, but that's the grit, right? Some people could just do enough, and others have an inside demon that they have to fill, or holes that they have to, you know, to fill or answer to or prove to somebody. For me, it was always an outward proof, because I was told so many negative things as a child that as an adult, luckily I had a mindset shift, and now I have to prove so much. And I still do that today. I still am a pleaser, like an ultimate pleaser.
But at least the good thing is you use that negative situation to turn it into something positive. Yeah. Someone, Mr. Brand, parents, whoever said negative things to you, but you kept looking for the next thing and next thing to get better.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was getting out of a bad neighborhood. I hated it there. I didn't want to live there. I saw where other people lived and I wanted to live a better life that way. So that for me was the motivator. Now, you and I could have both turned that the other way and said, I'm a victim. Poor me.
Nine out of 10 do.
Yeah.
It's probably a few 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah, it's a few of us who turned that around to our advantage.
So speaking of, I wrote a book, you wrote a book, but we both kind of wrote the book in our own lives and follow it. Well, the thing is, you have a great life and you've built some things, because the point that I got out of the book, and it's common knowledge, like there's nothing new under the sun, it's just what we do about it and how we employ it. And so one of the things that's always been said since, you know, caveman times, couldn't articulate it, but your thoughts dictate your feelings, and your feelings then put you into action, and then your actions become your behavior. And so what this book for me did was it put some things that I, A, didn't consider as harmful, and they are, and B, even the things that I knew were helpful, I wasn't doing because I didn't like doing it. You know, hint, there's a lot of push-ups going on. But the other part of it is the getting of the accountability buddy, which is asking for help, which is what I was horrible at. And so it got me into the routine. So I started changing my thoughts on these particular items, started changing my feelings because I felt good about them instead of having anxiety about them, which changed to the action, and they became behavior. And then when you do those behaviors, then it becomes a habit. And 31 days is at least what you need to make a habit. Stick,
yeah.
Where it becomes, it's not a habit, it's not, it becomes second nature.
Yeah, what happens is a lot of the guys have now taken that course multiple times. I've got one guy that's taken it 5 times. You think, well, what's wrong with him? Well, he's a very successful entrepreneur, great father, great husband, came from being a school teacher to now building this great business that keeps growing.
But when you say they take it 5 times, what you mean by that is they haven't read it 5 times. You put on an actual group of up to 10 to 12, 13.
A couple dozen.
Okay, at a time. And they're called class of 001. It reminds me of the Navy SEALs. I was class of 002. Your drop rate is much lower than the Navy SEALs, because this is not Mount Everest, like you said. It's doable. But I think the reason he does it, I don't know who you're talking about, but I think the reason he does it is because every class that he takes, he gets exposed to a couple dozen amazingly committed people who want to change their lives, and that's kind of people he wants to be around.
That's part of it. The other part is when I ask people, hey, you've already taken this class once, twice, 3 times, why are you doing it again? They usually say, I've got unfinished business. They always tell me that, and they say, because on this day 23 or 21 or 19 or 12, I didn't quite do all the things that I wanted to do, and
very interesting.
They're finishing up what they didn't
finish. I like that. I might inspire me. I think I referred somebody to you, Todd Halls, shout out Coach Todd Halls, Boca Raton. If he takes that, maybe I'll go through it with Todd, or maybe I should just put the boys through it. So I've got 3 boys. Unfortunately, it is men. I have a daughter who's 30, and she is tougher than all my boys. She would really love this book, but I gave her the book, by the way. I bought it for all my kids. But maybe I'll get the 3 boys, which are 20. Peter turns 20 Friday, 22 and 25, and just do it with them. So do a class with them. But so how? What's the age range? What class are you on? What's the age range that you see?
Yeah, we're wrapping up class 007 right now, In a couple of weeks, we start 008 in English, 009 in Spanish simultaneously, separate, but at the same rate. And 007 is going to wrap up. And so far, the age range has been a couple of 18-year-olds have taken this class and a couple of 60-year-olds have taken it. That's the range so far. The average is more in the middle.
Yeah.
And another thing, here's something pretty interesting. You talk about your boys. My son, Ryan, he just turned 18 last week. He's in boot camp with the Army. And one of the letters that he wrote to us is, I'm going to join Dad's 31-day thing. I don't want a discount. I want to join it. And then if I'm one of the top students, I want to move into the program, the brotherhood, the maintenance program that we have. So that's a very rewarding feeling. Someone you're trying to help all your life for 18 years now, and finally something clicked. It's because he's met a lot of you guys. And he says, these guys are special, and I want to be like that.
Yeah, I met him. He's special, too. So a couple of your kids really stick out. They're unique. And your whole family is, I call them Stepford family. They're not real. They cannot be real. I mean,
AI.
It's really incredible what you've built over there in Weston. So you moved out to the better neighborhood. You've got the ideal family. And it's not, you don't have not faults. Things happen. Families are people. But man, what just a bunch of great mindset, entrepreneurial mindset, protectors, you know, after my own heart, one of your boys got into a scrap trying to protect somebody at camp. So God bless them for that and you. So let's talk about the cost. I know if it's these things never go away. And at this point right now, because you said he doesn't want a discount, it's a very, you don't do this to make a lot of money.
Not at all.
So what,
I've made my money in other things and I've retired. And now this is what I'm doing to give back and have an absolute blast. I charge $199 for 31 days with me. I'm in it. You've seen, I'm in that WhatsApp. I'm talking every day. I take private calls in between for $199. I can tell you that to have a 15-minute call with me on one-on-one coaching is a lot more than $199, but I throw out a couple of those, even to one person who might, in those 31 days, talk to me multiple times. If they're going through something, if I can help them, I do that. And then the book is, what does it say there? $19.99. That's the entire cost.
What's next? Because you just sold a few of your companies, which is amazing. That congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I remember the day that I sold my shares of that company 2 years ago, and it was generational changing type, not only for the money, but for the proof. I'd love to be the example that you can redefine yourself.
Absolutely.
30 years in construction. Now I'm doing coaching and
whatever you want.
Less that at doing the podcast, having the recording studios, totally different. Right. And, most people thought it couldn't be done just because 30 years, a lot of ingrained habits, but I was so ready for that. What's next for you?
Yeah. So remember, I come from an inventory business of warehousing and a lot of products, over $1 million of cost at any time in those boxes out of my pocket. I didn't have partners in those businesses. So that's an intense business. You're always worrying. What if there's a fire? What if there's a flood? Boy. What if people stop buying? There's a million vendors, a million websites, 700,000 email addresses. A lot
of liability out there.
A lot of stuff going on. And now that's gone. I got the cash. I've got cash coming in for a while from that. But the difference now is that I'm doing exactly what I want. I heard people, I have a friend named Cesar Quintero. He's a coach here in South Florida. And he told me once, you know, you really got to find your passion. And it wasn't a coaching session. We're just friends, entrepreneurs together. And I said, I don't believe in that. I'm going to work and build and save and invest. And man, he was right. I got to call him and tell him he was right. I found my passion. To me, it's coaching. But coaching in this group with the brotherhood and coaching with the book and teaching people what's worked for me and what's also worked for a lot of entrepreneurs who I've coached. If I said this worked for me because I'm a weird, special kind of guy, okay. But I'm just a normal guy.
Right.
And this worked for me and a bunch of other guys just to get to another level in whatever you want. Call it your relationship with your spouse, your kids, your neighbors, your company, whether you're an employee, an entrepreneur, this works.
Well, you walk the walk. And what I like about your coaching style and similar to mine is I don't tell people what to do. I tell people, this is what's worked for me when I've been in similar situations. Or if you have a situation that I've never been in, then I say, listen, I don't know. I've never gone there. But I know somebody who you might want to talk to. Because you don't give them advice just to give them advice. And B, you give them true, tried and true processes and theories and not just theories, but actual stuff that worked, result-based.
And I see that with my children, too. I've got four children from the ages of 9 to 18. And when I used to dictate and tell, here's what you're going to do, that, you know, they may have done it, but they dragged their feet. There's no lesson learned. Yeah. And in the end, nobody's happy. But when I say, look, there was a kid down the street who did that. He rode a bike without a helmet. And he got hit in the head. I make up half the stories with my kids. But I say he got hit by a car and his head hit the ground and he cracked his brain. Now he's really injured. He's in a wheelchair or he died. My kids go and put on the helmet. Just because I tell them a story. Now with my coaching clients, I don't have to make up stories like that. But with my kids, when they're little, I just have to scare them enough to go do the right thing. But now they
There's enough scary business. You don't got to make up stories.
There's plenty to go there where I can share mine or my friends' stories. But that's the key. It's to let them make that decision. Same with coaching. I don't tell people, what are you going to do? I say at the end of the call, hey, can you do this thing? What can you commit to? And they'll tell me.
Yeah.
And okay, that's what you're going to do by next call, right?
Right. Perfect. And they commit to it. And then, so, and we got to land this plane. There's so much I could talk to you about, but a lot of coaches watch this because of the Plenty of Coaches business model that I have, and this airs on the Plenty of Coaches network. But what do you do with a client who you give advice, you give counsel, you give advice, and they don't follow it? They're just, let's say their problem is they're a procrastinator. They put stuff off. They don't prioritize correctly. And you help them, give them ways to overcome procrastination, but that's the problem and they don't do it. So how long do you futz around with somebody like that?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of patience. I also don't get rude or yell at anyone, but I don't have patience for bad behavior. But here's what I do. If you procrastinate, then we got to do something about it. You're apparently not going to do the data entry in your company. You can't stand that. Then guess what? It's time to outsource that. Right. You procrastinate because you don't want to do that. Now, do you want to make sales calls? You're all about it. That's what you want to do. That's not the thing to outsource then in your situation. But if it's the opposite, you're the business owner, but you want to do data entry, then go get somebody to go do the other stuff. Right. So that's part of it. That's really the main. So
I like it because it's the human at nature aspect of it is you just don't say, well, you're a procrastinator, you don't have priorities. So business rules tell us that you need to prioritize and force yourself to do it because being uncomfortable is healthy, and it is. But you're right. If you can outsource it, why wouldn't you? So you take the human aspect and you say, listen, if it ain't for you, it ain't for you. But could you find somebody that could do it at a reasonable price where you could still make a little bit of money at that task? Or is that going to lead to you doing things to make a lot more money because somebody else is actually doing it? And so I love that about you. And that's great advice.
Yeah. Focus on the thing that makes you the money and also that you enjoy it. And that's a big part of it because look, our life is short. 100 years from now, we're not only going to be dead, our kids are going to be dead.
Yeah.
So what did you do? You live this life doing all these things you hated to do. You could grow a business and scale it a lot better focusing on the things that you're better at.
That's right.
Isn't that a win-win? You're going to make more money, grow your business, and enjoy your days?
That's right. Amen. I don't really have a great way to end this show, but not yet. We're going to come up with one. That's kind of the fun of doing these things. I don't wait until everything's perfect.
That's right.
Let's put it together. Let's get it out on the air because the advice in the middle on a podcast is not a speech. The speech is the beginning and the end is most important. But a podcast, it's all the stuff in the middle. So thanks for coming in. Brotherhood by Design on LinkedIn, right? Joel Gandara. Thanks for coming in. Having a slight edge advantage really separates you, and I'm glad to be in your orbit.
Awesome. Glad you're here and glad I'm in yours.
All right, brother.